You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. 5 years ago, a grassroots community-engaged research center was established at UC Davis, the Belosan Center for Filipino Studies. Since 2018, the center has worked to record and elevate the experiences of the Filipino diaspora and create an academic space for the field of Filipino studies. Now, the center is marking the beginning of a new era, independent of the university, but still focused on highlighting the history and the stories of this Asian community. Here to talk more about the center's past, present, and future is Dr. Robin Rodriguez. She is Professor Emeritus of Asian American Studies at UC Davis and the founder of the Belosan Center, as well as its new umbrella organization, the Amado Kaya Initiative, named after her late son. Welcome to Insight, Dr. Rodriguez.
Thank you so much for having me, Vicky.
You know, this was such a groundbreaking institution back in 2018. You are the founder of this. Can you give us the backstory of what led to the creation of the Belosan Center at UC Davis?
Sure. You know, your previous guest was really talking about systemic racism in healthcare. Well, really, we continue to deal with systemic racism in terms of investment in research on communities of color. So the story for the Belosan Center really goes back, I think, to when I first started at UC Davis and 2011. I was actually hired specifically for my expertise in Filipino studies, and it was exciting because I was actually brought in with another faculty member, a Dr. Sarita C., who also does this work in Filipino studies. And so we already thought this is a wonderful opportunity to come together and create a space to really develop Filipino studies. Had approached the dean at the time. The dean sort of rejected our proposal for the creation of some sort of a center. And really, after that time, I tried again and again to apply for funding for different research projects. All of my research has really in the main been focused on the Filipino community, often rejected. This is a common experience for many Filipino scholars. And by 2018, I had just gotten a full professorship. So that's really the highest rank you can achieve in the professoriate. And yet I still had students coming to me from other departments on campus, from outside of Davis, really struggling in their doctoral programs with very little support, faculty members dissuading them from studying the Filipino experience. And I thought, you know, I need to leverage my new status as full professor, and I was also chair at the time of Asian American Studies. My deep roots in the community as a community organizer, engaged scholar, and just really tap into just a culture of philanthropy. And a culture of really coming together to create institutions. So, you know, we have so many examples in the Filipino-American community where the Filipino community has come together to, whether it's been to purchase buildings. You know, there's been a history of Filipinos early on in our history. And mind you, we've been in this country for over a century. Mm-hmm. And so the early migrants who were low-wage workers still found a way to come together and purchase a building. In the 1960s, Filipino community members came together to build what was called is still called the Agbayani Village, a retirement home for now older Filipino migrant workers. And so I thought, you know what? We do this. We know how to do this. Let's just try.
Yeah, I mean, you make it sound with the hindsight, so simple. But what I hear from you is you had to fight and fight and fight to make this a reality, or even just fight to make Filipino studies relevant. You know, when you look back on that time over the years, were there a theme of like main arguments you would get from people in higher positions of academia, you know, who would kind of dissuade, you know, pursuing this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the response is, who cares? Who cares about Filipino Americans? I remember being in a text exchange with my late colleague and beloved friend, Dr. Don Mabalan, who really put a lot of attention on Larry Itliong, the labor leader who now people have some familiarity with. His birthday was just last week.
Yeah, it was just Larry Itliong Day, October 25th.
That's right. And Dr. Mabalon was one of the really key movers and shakers to put that new kind of spotlight on Larry. And I remember we were in a text exchange and she sent me a screenshot of a response to a grant application for the book that she ended up publishing. And basically, it was like, we're not going to fund this because who's going to read a book about Larry Itliong? And that's sort of the example. And, you know, there was actually research that came out not too long ago. I think it was published in Scientific American just about the lack of investment generally in Asian American research. I mean, I really think that has to do with the ways that Asian Americans, there's a kind of model minority myth attached to Asian Americans. They're all successful. They're all doing great. Why are we going to really look
at them? And a monolith, right?
Right, and a monolith. Why are we going to invest in research dollars in them? But really, when you disaggregate our community, you see that our experiences are so distinctive. But that's not something that major institutions that fund research understand. I think that's shifted a little bit. And so we had to fight tooth and nail and have to really kind of be very imaginative about how we were going to create a space at this institution.
And talking about history that might be overlooked or neglected, it's an important reminder, maybe even a first for people to know. I mean, this year marks 125 years since the Philippine-American War. I mean, that started before 1900 in 1898. Can you remind us what happened then and also how that really characterized the Filipino-American relationship across history in that time?
Sure. 1898 really marked the United States emerging as a global empire. You know, the United States is very much organized early on, you know, and arguably it can be said even today by this manifest destiny, right? That was sort of the thinking that justified settler colonialism in the continent and then eventually colonialism overseas. And so 1898, you know, we're typically taught that it was the moment of the Spanish-American War that was ended by the Treaty of Paris, but we don't get taught is that the Filipinos had been fighting in an anti-colonial struggle against the Spanish and won, had declared their independence. We celebrated as a community every June 12th. And in effect, the United States and the Spanish kind of brokered a deal. The Spanish didn't want to have to declare defeat to its colonial subjects
and honor the independence.
Right. They instead, you know, conceded to defeat to the United States and sold the Philippines to the United States for $20 million in the Treaty of Paris. And so that whole history has generally obscured, still obscured. You know, you might be lucky if you get more than a sentence that talks about the Philippines, and certainly no real account of the Philippine-American War. But the reality is Filipinos fought their previous colonizer and fought again against the Americans, who they felt betrayed them, because there was this sense that America, having its own anti-colonial history, was going to come in and be an ally. And they soon, you know, what Filipinos thought would be an ally turned their guns against the Filipino people themselves.
And am I corrected? Did the Philippines end up gaining their independence? It doesn't seem like that long ago, like in 1946. It was after World War II.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's something that people will debate. But certainly, I think there's a general consensus in Filipino studies among Filipino scholars that 1946 did not mark a genuine independence. It really marked what many of us think of as a moment of neocolonial dependence that has continued to be sustained between the United States and the Philippines, and that, you know, was already codified in the Philippine Constitution that really granted or really preserved a lot of U.S. economic, political, and military interests in the Philippines. And that's really continued in so many ways, you know, over the decades since 1946. You know, many people know of the late dictator, Ferdinand Marcos, that he was an ally to the United States, despite, you know, thousands and thousands of people rallying in the streets despite clear evidence of human rights violations. The U.S. continued to support the Marcos regime. And even since then, human rights violations by successive Philippine presidents, oftentimes the U.S. government has turned a very blind eye. And we worry about the state of the Philippines, especially now that the late dictator's son is president.
And I bring that up because here in California, specifically in our area, we have a large Filipino community. I mean, Filipinos are either the largest or second largest AAPI community in many counties in our region, Sacramento County, Placer County, San Joaquin County, Yolo County as well. So, you know, there are deep ties here. You know, if you can share a little bit about the local history that Filipinos and Filipino Americans have made here in this portion of Northern California.
Yeah, well, you know, of course, because Sacramento is, you know, the farm to fort capital. But, you know, that what that means then is that we've always, this region has always been really crucial, a site for agricultural production, right? And because of that, it has always, it was the first landing place, really, for early Filipino migrants who were really brought in during the colonial period as laborers for farms all across the state of California. Now, in Sacramento, I mean, the Filipino community has been here for nearly a century. At least our institutions even are still around. You have the Filipino community of Sacramento and vicinity, the FCSV, that will be celebrating, I believe, its 100th year in 1929. Although even with them, they've been fighting and struggling to be able to build a community center. You know, the community members have been slowly but surely raising money to be able to finally create a center to mark, you know, a century of presence, but also to be a space for generations in the future as Filipinos continue to migrate directly from the Philippines to Sacramento. People are migrating from the Bay Area into Sacramento. So I'm a Bay Area transplant. So there are all of these wonderful institutions that Filipinos have created and built in this community. And yet a lot of those things, very, you know, there hasn't been a lot of attention to them. People don't even realize that kind of trace that Filipinos you know, have on the region.
Yeah, especially when talking about the migrant community. I mean, for decades and many, many decades, we know of Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta, but then there's also Larry Itliong, which has been getting more awareness in recent years. And I think some would argue overdue awareness to the contributions to the Central Valley and the migrant community. That also brings me to your center, the Belosan Center. You know, can you talk to us about the namesake, why you named it the Belosan Center?
Yeah, you know, Carlos Belosan was a writer and also a labor organizer predating Larry Itliong and others. He was writing in the 1940s. He wrote a very critical novel, America's in the Heart, semi-autobiographical novel that really detailed the experiences of Filipino migrants in the early decades of the 20th century. And, you know, in many ways, he himself was forgotten, died quite young in his late 40s, very impoverished, in spite of some, you know, success with his writing, still, you know, experienced racism in so many ways. Was really, I think, rediscovered in the 1960s with the fight for ethnic studies and the establishment of Asian American studies. So his, he was brought to new attention. And you know, I encountered him for the first time in an ethnic studies course as an undergrad. He was so deeply impactful on me personally. I remember wanting to buy a book for my brother. I was like, can you imagine this has been happening in this state? We had no idea. And, you know, that led me on my own journey. And so I wanted the center to be named after Carlos Belosan to really center our commitment as a community-engaged center. Carlos Belosan didn't just write to write. He wrote for the purpose of amplifying our community's issues and problems and really using that platform to also advocate for the Filipino community. So I wanted to be able to capture that by naming the center after such, you know, an important historical figure.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Robin Rodriguez, founder of the UC Davis Belosan Center for Filipino Studies, which is now becoming part of the Amado Kaya Initiative. So let's get to this new chapter. What led to this new chapter for the Belosan Center being incorporated into the Amado Kaya Initiative, which is named after your son?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I think as soon as we were able to secure some major investment, also through advocacy efforts. So first we got all sorts of funding from the community. Then the community mobilized and got a state allocation. And that was fantastic, being able to have all of this money now to run all of our research and education programs. But almost immediately, I could already feel just the ways that the university wasn't going to support us. And so, you know, by 2020 already, a couple of years in, I was already feeling that we were going to have to make an exit plan, because there was really not going to come, no support was going to come from the university. And during the pandemic, I think there was just a sense. And, you know, mind you, I think UC Davis and the UC campuses as a whole have not been the most ideal place for lots of people. You know, of course, there have been numerous labor struggles on the campus. And I think a lot of us were just feeling like this is not an institution that really cares for its workers. Certainly, you know, didn't feel like it was cared for its students, didn't care for the kinds of research that matters to Californians, really. And so I was already feeling this in 2020. And frankly, you know, I lost my son in 2020 as well. He had decided to live in the Philippines to live and learn from indigenous communities. And I think that tragedy, along with all of the things that had already been happening in the institution, you know, it made me pause, made me think, you know what, maybe there's a different way. And, you know, it was an invitation, I think, for me to really explore alternative possibilities. So, you know, I decided I was going to retire early. I think I was sort of part of that great, I mean, there were so many people, I think, during the pandemic realized we could remake our worlds. I did too. And, you know, of course, I thought, Amado Kaya, what a wonderful a way to honor my son, to have his work live on. He was such a he was so committed to Filipino studies, to ethnic studies himself. Really, really loved documenting, actually, histories of the leadership and contribution of Filipino labor leaders like Larry Itliong and Philip Veracruz. That was actually work he did before he left for the Philippines. So I thought, you know, if we're going to take this institution, the Belosan Center, out of the UC system, it makes perfect sense mm-hmm. to be under a new namesake, you know.
A new century.
Yeah, a new century, right? I think, a Filipino-American who represents, yes, the 21st century Filipino. He was biracial. He was hearing impaired. I think that just his identity, his commitments really represent a kind of the Filipino-American experience of today. And so, you know, it's been really exciting. We're already, you know, I mean, the transition has been sort of quick, but it's and so we already have a new fellowship launched. We have this wonderful fellowship for young folks interested in being digital media producers. We have another one that will have people going into the Central Valley to continue to document Filipinos' contributions to the Valley, whether they were farm workers or, you know, our healthcare workers. So, you know, we're really excited that we're seeing many of these programs continue on.
Just in about a month or so of it being incorporated, right, you've already built so much momentum, mm-hmm. you know, for the years and the decades to come. You know, finally, you mentioned that you retired and you're professor emeritus from UC Davis, but you also started a nonprofit farm. And I want to talk to you about that, you know, before we let you go for our conversation.
Yeah. There were so many
things. Reimagination Farm.
Yeah, Reimagination Farm. You know, COVID, I think, so many transitions, marked so many transitions for, I guess, all of us, certainly for the family. You know, among the things that was going through my mind, along with, I got to get out of this university. We need to start to do something new. Part of the new that we wanted to do as a family was to really reconnect differently with the land. I think for us as a family, COVID wasn't just about, you know, some virus. For us, I think we felt like it was symptomatic about the ways that we as humanity are not in right relation to the land. And so I think as partly as a way of continuing to honor what Amado did. I mean, he was learning from indigenous communities who were at the forefront of fighting against climate change, and really trying to center indigenous knowledges of the land, because climate change is very much about, again, this relationship we have of extraction to the land. And so we just felt that, you know, we needed to kind of do that as well as a lifestyle shift. So lots of changes in our family, learning to farm for the very, very first time. We've had a bountiful first harvest. And I suppose we have had also a bountiful harvest in the new initiative of, you know, replanting, so to speak, the Bluzon Center into Amado Kaya.
Yeah, and touching so many other lives.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rodriguez. It was wonderful speaking with you.
Well, thank you so much for having me this morning.
Dr. Robin Rodriguez is the founder of the UC Davis Bluzon Center for Filipino Studies, as well as its new incarnation as part of the Amado Kaya Initiative. Still ahead, the Broadway International Food Festival makes its return this weekend, bringing vibrant food, arts, music, and so much more to Sacramento. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.